Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we proceed any further, I want to extend an enormous thank you to Bev Capshaw, who hosted the show in my absence last week. Bev conducted a fascinating, fantastic, that's Glenn applauding in the back. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but we're applauding Bev and her great show with a great conversation with naturalist Paul Jensen covering the ecosystem of the Green Swamp, the wildlife corridor, as well as specific ways to see and enjoy the wonders of Florida's wildlife. I'm still thinking about a scene Paul mentioned involving a big group of pygmy rattlesnakes. Anyway, if you didn't have a chance to hear last week's show, do yourself a favor and listen to it on the WNF archives. As for today's program, my guest will be the applauding Glenn Hatchell, and we're also applauding Glenn Hatchell, returning for the 11th installment of Ask the Trainer. If you've caught some of the past installments of Ask the Trainer, which we aim to present every 3 or 4 months approximately, you'll recall that it involves around inviting listeners to call in with questions for Glenn about their dogs or their cats' behavior. Until his recent retirement, Glenn served as the Behavior and Enrichment Manager at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. He's an accomplished dog trainer and behaviorist, and former WNF programmer, as well as occasional Talking Animal guest host himself. On today's show, he will field several calls and emails seeking to answer listener questions about their animal's behavior and or provide guidance on training. We again invite listeners to call in at 813-239-9663 with questions for Glenn. Or the questions can be submitted by email at dj@wmnf.org or via text 813-433-0885. So please join us. You can call in now. And incidentally, we've learned over the years that phone calls tend to be the most effective overall because they enable Glenn to ask the caller follow-up questions, more precisely assessing the issue and sort of better calibrating his recommended solution or suggestion. Still, for listeners unable to call or just prefer not to, we also aim to incorporate questions submitted by email and, again, dj@wnf.org or via text 813-433-0885. And again, typically we don't screen the calls. We just put them on hold right away. So we just ask for your patience while we get to your call, which we will eventually for sure. You just have to hang tight sometimes. But so you can feel free to call or email now while Glenn and I talk for a few minutes. Before responding to listener questions, we often chat about a related topic for a moment or two. So one important point, by the way, welcome, Glenn.
Thank you very much, sir. Good to see you again.
Welcome back. Good to see you. At number 11, we're rolling along here.
Always a pleasure to be in here.
Yeah, it's so great to have you in person, in the studio. So one thing we haven't really covered specifically, even though it was listeners have called in, obviously over those 11 or 10 previous shows for behavioral advice, is that it really takes time to change behavior. So maybe you can sort of talk to just sort of being patient and what's required, not just taking time, but sort of the repetition that's obviously important to underscore those changes, et cetera.
I will do that. But first, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Tell us something fascinating that you learned at the conference that you were recently at.
Well, I was just telling Glenn off air that I was last week when I missed the show, I was hooked partly to this International Captive Wildlife Conference that they do every couple of years or so. And so one thing I was fascinated by, and I hope to maybe even have the guy that talked about this, was talking about having released captive elephants. I can't remember right off the top of my head what country this was, but released captive elephants into the wild, making them basically sort of wild, free-roaming elephants again after having X amount of years in captivity, which I thought was improbable, if not impossible, to pull off. And so that was a fascinating account. And next week, I'll get into this more specifically later, but one of the speakers was a guy who formed an organization. He was 13, and Teen People magazine called him one of 20 teens who will change the world. And anyways, he has a fascinating story, or stories really, which I'll mention later in this show before we go. But it was really interesting and great, and it typically is. And always learn something, usually find some intriguing guests to bring back to the show. So,
yeah, it is. I mean, things like that, just when I come across a story of the way that they're using, I think it's rats, to find landmines.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing what's happening around the world with animals.
Yeah, we had one of those people on, that was many years ago, but it's like, when you keep hearing these new things they're doing or new discoveries, or again, sending a captive elephant back into the wild and it actually works. It's like, well, that gives us hope, and it's fascinating to hear the story along the way.
Yeah, and And if we think about it, kind of bringing all of this together, even training those rats, it's based on what Pavlov learned, you know, 125, 130 years ago of, because he used mice in that situation.
Yeah.
And the thing was, once the mice discovered where the reward was, they found the quickest path to get to that reward.
Sure.
And that's really the same thing that's happening with, you know, doing landmines. And obviously that gets into a whole deep level that I can't understand, but I'm absolutely fascinated with, you know, all of those things that are happening with what, with non-companion animals, put it that way. You know, not the dogs and the cats. But of course there's dogs doing a lot of work these days, especially these days around the world with a lot of the humanitarian crises that are happening.
For sure.
But the time to take a behavior, the time that it takes to change a behavior has been on my mind a lot lately, because this is where my my world started to collide, because so much is happening right now in the world that, you know, we're having to adjust and react to. But I had found myself, well, I found myself in situations that I was reacting in pressure situations, chaotic situations, which carried to reacting in trivial situations. You know, somebody in front of me at the light is taking 2 seconds before they start going. You know, and I think we can all relate to that. It's just kind of one of those things that
happens.
Don't
they know I'm in a hurry?
Exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it is that kind of thing that once, it's triggers. You know, you start getting those little things that just add to it more and more and more and more. And I think one of the things that trainers and behaviorists are dealing with around the country right now is a lot of reactivity from their dogs out on walks. And it really, in the last few months, I've had the opportunity to experience again the fundamentals that I used to use in a group class. And where the very first week in our group class with dogs, and there would be anywhere from 4 to 8 dogs in this, and we would start out the very first thing of having the dog handlers, the owners, I'll refer to them as, start treating the dogs. Treat and treat again. Because we want the dogs really paying attention to the owners. It's like, hey, this is, you know, you're going to keep giving me these treats over and over.
You got my undivided attention.
Right, yeah. Right. And what we would do then from that is I would start having each person basically walk around in a circle around the group with their dog. Now, depending on the reactivity of the dogs, obviously this is a very in-the-moment kind of thing that we're managing to. The only thing that the dog owners needed to do was to keep their dog more interested in them getting treats than the dog walking around. So everyone got this practice, and then we started all doing the circles. And obviously, as you can imagine, that first week looked rather chaotic. The dogs didn't know what was going to happen. They knew they were getting treats, but oh my gosh, there's 4 other dogs around here.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody's nervous in that point. When you've got your dog on a leash, there's other dogs, you know, 10 feet away. And we all feel like, you know, at that point, everybody is watching me to see how I'm doing it.
Right.
You know, reality is nobody's watching you. They're watching their dog,
sure,
worried that everybody else is watching them.
Right.
You know? But it was, it would literally be, I mean, the magic would happen over the next 2 or 3 weeks as we continued to repeat this process. Because one, the people got more comfortable, and the dogs began learning what to expect next. They started learning the routine.
Yeah.
And they started doing it again and again. So by the 4th week, I mean, it would be amazing to watch these dogs walking around in this nice walk, looking at their owners. Now, by no means did it look like something that, you know, looked like perfection by any means. And this was 4 weeks into it.
Yeah.
But to think of that much progress over a 4-week period is pretty amazing. And it really comes back to the repetition. And especially with dogs, having that repetition of they knew what to expect. They had been there before. They knew they were going to get treats. So immediately it was like, hey, last time we were here.
This is a good place.
Yeah. They start looking at their owner, which again, that also comes back to Pavlov and classical conditioning.
Sure.
But you never know how long it's going to take. You know, some dogs would respond to it really well and do good, and other dogs were more exuberant and would, you know, have more things that would have to be dealt with. And sometimes that involves maybe this one has cheese, this one has hot dogs, and this one has, you know, some type of other, you know, generic treat.
Sure.
So that's what's been in my mind lately, because it's taken so long for me personally to eliminate, as best as I can right now, to eliminate reacting in trivial situations that I really could. If I watch somebody else react in some of those, I'd kind of look over. It's like, that guy's got issues. Well, you know, that's I knew that. So I'd been working on myself to begin with. But it does, it takes time. You just never know about... we never know how long it's going to take, but it's that repetition, sometimes three times, sometimes 3 weeks, and sometimes 6 months or longer. So, you know, it's easy to say trust the process, but professional trainers and behavior specialists trust the process.
Yeah.
You know? But so anyway.
You got to give it time, and you got to know that it's going to vary from animal to animal how much time that's going to require.
Right. And there's things to adjust. So within, so since, well, just another reminder, we're here on Ask the Trainer on Talking
right,
Animals.
I was just going to say, speaking of repetition, I'm going to repeat the ways you can get in touch with Glenn, because you're hearing Glenn Hatch right now. He's a animal behaviorist and dog trainer and former WNF programmer. And we're doing a segment we do every 3 or 4 months called Ask the Trainer, where you're welcome to call in or email in or text in and ask questions of Glenn about your dog, any issues you're having, or your cat, any behavioral questions, things like that. So to reach us here for that, you can call 813-239-9663. And again, we'll just put your call immediately on hold. We won't be screening calls, but just hang tight and we'll get your call ASAP. You can also email dj@wmnf.org, or you can contact us via text 813-433-0885. So any questions that you've had about behavioral, I wouldn't say problems, but issues at the house with your dog, cat, multiple, or other animals too. We have done birds, I think, and other animals over the years. We don't discriminate. Any animal
That's
you got
right.
a question about, then you can call in 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org, or again, you can text at 813-433-0885. So carry on where you were there, Glenn.
Often people have come or have raised questions. Well, let's go ahead and take the call. We just had a call coming in. Let's act on that.
All right.
Because I can talk about this for a long time, but I'd rather hear from somebody else at the moment.
We can come back to it periodically. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell, Ask the Trainer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I got a couple of Staffordshire Terriers, and they're both females, they're both big, and they're 4 years old. Got them both at the time of 8 weeks old. And recently, one is, they're trying to establish dominance, I think, and one has become very aggressive to the point of drawing blood with other dogs even. And I have to keep them separated. Is there anything I can do to work on getting that dog acclimated where it can be sociable?
I would say the first, that since he has, has done damage. Matt, that's the wrong. I can't think of a softer word at the moment. But since as you said there, he's drawn blood on other dogs. I would first talk to a vet about medication, because not just medication, but have a vet do a full checkout, because sometimes the aggression, what you'll see there, is actually a behavioral response from pain or something else that's happening with the dog. So in a case as what will be, I would say, as complex as this, I would absolutely start with a veterinarian to begin with.
Okay. Right now I got them separated.
I would keep doing that.
Yeah, I keep the aggressive one kennel-wise, and the other one is sociable. You know, she gets along with the other dogs fine, but if I let that one out, it's like a switch trips in her, and she goes aggressive real quick.
Yep.
And it's strange. And they were raised together from the time of 8 weeks, you know? It's like...
Well, but that... And that's why I wonder if these behavior issues are actually presenting as a sign of underlying medical and underlying medical issues.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you. All right, we'll take another one while we're at it. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell and Acid Trainer.
Yes. Is this open now? Because I listened to the whole thing through the last caller.
This is you on the air now, sir. So fire away.
Okay, this is Vince from Pinellas Park. I am a member, but I just wanted to throw in there that Pavlov's theory was based on the dog and the bells that he used at feeding time to get them acclimated to the system, to their routine. And even when he didn't put food out and he rang the bells, the dogs would start salivating and everything, knowing that it was for the food itself that the bells were being rung.
Vince, thank you very much. I do realize as you're saying that, I was talking more, I guess, about Skinner and really B.F. Skinner and his whole, the Skinner box where he did that bit. You're absolutely correct. Thank you for correcting me because if I had listened to this later, I would have been appalled to realize what I had said. So this is a perfect example of behavior changing because one of the things we want to do with animals is that as soon as the mistake happens, we want to show them the proper way to do it. We don't need to correct them. We don't need to correct them. We need to just show them the proper way to do it. So,
I didn't realize that the other example you used was not an example. So I just went, but you were talking about dogs at the time, and I thought the dog example would be better. And it is the theory. That's the theory was based on.
And you're absolutely right. And I always would point out in my classes or what I talked about this is that Pavlov was a researcher. He didn't have companion animals. So the way you, especially at that time, there were some ways that they would do the digestive systems to determine what was going on. And you're absolutely right. What he discovered is exactly what you described.
There you go.
All right, Vince, you're on a roll. And, of course, 2 minutes into the thing, I was not about to jump in and try to question our expert, Glenn Hatchell, but I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you caught who he meant.
I'm having a great day on it because I won 2 tickets earlier for a concert, the jazz concert. At Bill Haley or Hyman Theater. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, you're having a good day. So, did you have a specific question or comment for Glenn otherwise besides the Pavlov Skinner correction?
That was it. I was on the road, but I wanted to mention that because I always paid attention to that.
Okay, Vince.
Beautiful. Have a great day, Vince.
Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
You bet, sir. All right.
So again, that was Vince who called in 813-239-9663 as part of Ask the Trainer with, again, the trainer being Glenn Hatchell in this case. And again, you can do the same or you can email dj@wmnf.org or via text at 813-433-0885. So
this is really, it's amazing how that fit into my notes almost as if we set it up because I was thinking, I always try to think of analogies, and I was thinking about gymnasts because everybody, even if you're not a sports person, you've watched a gymnast, you've watched gymnasts, and you know that when they're practicing, they are being constantly coached. There is somebody right there by them, you know, encouraging, telling them time and time again, not what they did wrong, do this, get that hand planted, or whatever it may be. And one of the things that tied to what Vince said is it comes back to muscle memory. And I know this isn't what happened with me. I just had an old man brain moment there. But, you know, they say muscle memory is like riding a bike. And if the dog has become accustomed to every time we walk out of the house, I know the dog two houses down is going to be barking. So the dogs will come out of the house already amped up and ready to go after them. So for us to change the behavior of that, of our dog on the leash barking at the dog two houses down, we need to start working on that behavior before we walk out of our door of getting, no, look at me, here's what we're doing. So it's from a dog training aspect here, as we're talking about, some of these things can, they tie together over time. And that could be part of what the first caller was saying, is that there may have been something, if we think about from a behavior aspect, that constantly triggers that dog time and time again. And that's known as trigger stacking. But it gets to the point, not unlike I was talking about, I was experiencing, in that I wasn't just overreacting in chaotic situations. I was overreacting at ridiculously trivial situations, you know. So,
and that's why you said, hey, Glenn Hatchell, I'm going to have a word with you. And it's me, Glenn Hatchell, and we're going to see if we can address this a little bit with some of my own behavioral techniques that I've learned from working with animals.
Well, no, actually, it's from working with animals, and it's also a lot of therapy over the years.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's like, well, and this kind of all fits back to it, especially considering everything that has been happening in the world over the last few years, is that all the tools that I've gotten were to get me prepared for this. And I also think that with the dog, that, okay, we know we need to get their attention to us. We know that dog is going to be up there barking, so I want to get ahead of my dog, get him focused on me, so he doesn't even realize we just passed by that house we're walking by. And that's similar to what would happen in the group classes, when after the dogs had walked it a few times and looking at the owner, you could see their behavior starting to change a little bit.
Yeah. So. All right, we're coming back to that, but we're going to take another call right now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell. It's Ask the Trainer. Hello, yeah, it's you.
This is Jetty.
What is it?
We
sorry, I missed your name.
Jet.
Jack?
So we have a 3-year-old coon hound beagle mix who's had to spend on the same dry food for her pretty much for the last couple years. And all of a sudden only eats about half of it. And we thought it might be a dental issue. Because couldn't think of anything else, and she's acting very, you know, energetic and playful and everything. But we did schedule a dental cleaning, which is upcoming. However, today she was asking for a treat, and I gave her a rawhide type thing to eat, and she handled that just fine, which kind of told me it's not a tooth issue. So, and we've even, you know, tried taking this food and, you know, soaking it in water, and sometimes she'll eat it and sometimes she won't. But I guess the question is, what would cause a behavior change like that? Because I know dogs are very, you know, routine oriented.
I would think it's probably something internal. Again, I'm not a vet, so I'm not going to give, obviously anything like this, I would say, you know, check with your vet, and it's possible that you may be able to do that in conjunction at the dental cleaning. But in addition to water, you could try like vegetable broth or chicken broth, or possibly mixing some wet dog food in with a dry, or cheese.
Yeah.
You know, some of those things, something, again, to encourage and entice the eating.
Yeah. We mix some nut food in, and she does get that out. But is it common for a dog to just all of a sudden stop liking the food that they have eaten?
No, generally not. Generally, there would be something going on.
Okay.
You know, but again, it's usually, you know, it could be... Well, again, it comes back to the vet. That's why it could be something as simple as I don't know if it could be an allergy. Knowing how many dogs have odd allergy things in Florida and knowing we're kind of going through a seasonal change. And I also would think about how long it's been happening. It sounds like in this, since you also have done the dental change, that this is not something that happened a couple of days ago, but has been going on for a while. So that's also part of why I would think, depending on when her next vet appointment is, I would absolutely raise it with them.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you a lot.
Absolutely. Great. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for calling. All right, let's take another. We got a few more folks calling in, as we typically do at this point in the show. So, hi, you're on Talking Animals. It's Ask the Trainer with Glenn Hatchell. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Marilyn in California.
Hi.
My dog, I think it qualifies under the stacking of behavior. I discovered about 6 months ago that when the phone rings, he panics. And I didn't connect the dots for maybe the 6 months before that. And he insists on going out his doggy door. And he's 11 years old. I foster rescued puppies. I'm a foster failure with him. I adopted him.
Foster success from the dog's perspective.
Good point. But he was so fearful of everything and anything. And the good news, on a positive note, when I call his name and he's rushing to get away and go out that doggy door, or if I call him, if I realize he's outside trying to chew through the no-climb fence to get out, to run away, he at least comes to me. I mean, he's broken that part. But I can't... I'm learning now when the phone rings that I got to get his attention, if he's in the house, immediately. And he's very leery. He wants that, because I have a good treat for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't seem to stop. Yeah, that's great. If I catch him in time, he won't really, essentially, he's trying to run away, but he goes out into a dog pen with the no-climb fencing,
mm-hmm.
and he broke a tooth on trying to get out when I didn't realize that's where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't get that behavior. I can't seem to figure out. I don't want him to panic.
Right.
So, I've tried the calming. There's a calming product on the market, mm-hmm. that doesn't seem to affect him. You have to give it to him a little early.
Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an idea of how a professional trainer would approach it.
Okay.
And then if Duncan can help remind me at the end of the show, we'll do a couple of website addresses to the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers and the International Association for Animal Behavior Consultants.
Okay.
But in a situation, and this is really a great scenario of what you're describing, I'm going to focus on just addressing the phone issue, but a professional is going to ask a whole lot of questions to understand the big picture, to try to figure out what has your dog scared of when the phone rings.
Oh, okay, and I have to add one thing.
Sure.
I think I contributed it to it, because when I hear the phone ring, I jump up, you know, to go see the display before it kicks off.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably contributed to this. I don't know that's the fact, but he does seem tied in. In touch with wherever my emotions are.
Yes. Well, actually, what you just described there comes back to Pavlov. You you are absolutely hopping up and doing that when you hear the phone ring.
Right.
And that's the thing about it. It's like, well, and you said something there that's a line that I like. Everything a dog is responsible because of a human.
Wow.
And so... Well, you are correct that our responses to things are probably adding to it. But if you move like that without the phone ringing, does he run out the doggy door?
No.
Okay, so it's not you jumping up. It is it could be other things, but it's not you jumping up there.
Right.
But it is one of those steps that happens in that process.
Right.
But what a professional... trainer is going to work with you on is starting the And I'll just describe it like this. Starting the phone at the at a very low level to where the dog is not even realizing it.
Oh, good.
But it's there and getting his attention. Sorry. Getting the attention on you without realizing that the noise is there.
Right.
But you, it's also, you want to increase the level of the noise, but not to the point that it's going to cause the dog to run out the door.
Right.
And that's where, that's where the experience comes into play of hiring a professional trainer who can really, in that moment, be able to work with a big picture, but also work with an identifying, breaking down all of those little triggers that add up to
right
him running out the door.
Yes. And you just mentioned something else. I am inside and outside a lot, so I have that ringer on a booster ring, even on one phone, and the other phone that allows me to adjust it, I have it as high as it'll go. Mm-hmm. It is a shocking. I need it when I'm outside, but I don't dare turn it down because I'll forget to turn it back up when I'm outside.
Right.
But it, that is a, it's annoying to me even, but I, you know, when I'm inside, but I need it.
And I could go off in about 5 minutes talking about dogs' ears, hearing and such, yeah, but we're not going to go to that level.
Right. Well, thank you. That's a good, that helps a lot.
Good.
Thank
good.
You.
All right. Thanks
for listening
thanks
from California.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, that was Marilyn from California. Again, we're, if you just tuned in, just going to let you know that the voice you're primarily hearing is not mine. I'm Duncan Strauss, but whose voice you're primarily hearing is Glenn Hatchell. He's the trainer in the so-called Ask the Trainer segment that we're doing once again today after we do like 3 or 4 times a year, typically. And we invite people to call in with their questions about their dogs or their cats, behavior, training issues, other questions that they might have. And you can do that by calling 813-239-9663. You can email us, dj@wmnf.org, or you can do that by way of text at 813-433-0885. So let's take another one of our callers here at the moment. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell on Ask the Trainer.
Oh, yeah, hi.
Hello.
My name is, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm down in Sarasota. My name is Louie.
Hi, Louie.
And my story would be too long, but I wanted to make a suggestion. If you do feed the dogs dry food, don't make it soft, but wick some water up from the bottom of the bowl with the food and soften it somewhat. But the dog will love powdered or flake yeast sprinkled on the food, which gives all the B vitamins and whatever is in the yeast. About a month ago, I went to Fort Lauderdale, and a guy couldn't get his dog. I went there to help him with his dog. He couldn't get his dog to eat, and he would have to coax it and coax it and coax it, and was reluctant to eat, and he went out to Whole Foods and got some yeast, and the dog loves it. He puts the bowl down, and the dog licks the bowl clean.
Wow.
I don't think that dry food itself, without being softened a little bit, is good for the animal, because they're not masticators like people have teeth for masticating. The dog does not. And the yeast will just, it'll be terrific. And as I said, the dog won't have a problem.
Yep.
With, or a cat too. But dogs, you know, particularly, they're not as fussy, but they do need the nutrition.
That's right. They're not as fussy, but their tastes do change over as they age.
Well, dry food, you know, even when they're young, isn't good, because they can't, just like the individual said, they were going to go out for dental cleaning, and then they gave him a rawhide, something or other, and the animal had no problem with it. But the dry food does present a problem if you feed the animal nothing but dry food.
There are a lot of very high quality dry foods, which probably I think Duncan could do a whole show on foods and dog food and such.
Yeah,
in fact,
sure.
there's
I'm not saying that they're not nutritious. It's just difficult for the animal because the dog also, it takes so much of the liquid or fluid resources in order to digest it. If it's softened a little bit with water, it's better in my experience. That's just, you know.
Yep.
All right, Louis. Well, that's great. I love it when we have callers calling in to respond to previous callers and their questions. That's when we really got some good connections. I appreciate your call and your input. Thank you so much.
For everyone, the yeast is really important.
Yes. All right. Your nutritional yeast, yeast actually is wonderful for humans and animals. So
absolutely.
That's actually a really, that is, yeah, that is one of the things I was going to say is that is a great idea because seldom do I think of nutritional yeast, but.
No, it's almost essential, you know, because it's so important, the B vitamins. We really are deficient.
And if there are, if it is just some sort of intestinal, or I don't mean intestinal, but some sort of a digestive thing, something as simple as adding a little bit of that could actually clear it up for them. We just never know. Well, we don't. That's why we have vets.
All right, Louis. Well, thank you again. And the other caller, hopefully we'll get to sprinkling ASAP and we'll see what happens.
Sure.
Thanks again.
Have a nice day.
You too. Thanks, Louis. Okay, let's take another caller here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Glenn Hatchell. Let's ask the trainer. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Awesome. I actually have two questions. The first one is, I have a Great Pyrenees. He is the biggest dog in the household, but he is scared of everything. Like, literally, a door opens, he won't walk past someone. Like, it's ridiculous, because he's the biggest animal in the household, but he's scared of everything. How do I work with him to get him over being scared of walking past someone or another dog or going into his kennel, like walking down the hallway? He's just scared of everything.
How old is he?
A year and a half.
How long have you had him?
Since he was 8 weeks old.
There are a lot of, if he's a year and a half and still dealing with it, it may not be the easiest thing. And sometimes Great Pyrenees can be a little, since they are, bred as working dogs, a lot of that DNA, I'll use the term DNA, that ingrained, doesn't adjust well, but from what you're describing sounds to me like more that something, since he was with you at 8 weeks, has he always shown this type of fear?
No, that's the problem. He used to be really good. Like, you tell him come inside and he come right inside. Now you say okay inside and he doesn't want to come inside. Like, it's like he's terrified all of a sudden. Like, literally, in the last 2 months, he's been terrified to come inside when he's told, okay, inside. You know, like, he'd be so good. When you said inside, he would come inside. You'd say kennel, he'd go to his kennel. And he's not doing that anymore. And I don't know what's going on. It's so random.
Was this going on before? I don't know what area you live, but was this going on before any of the hurricanes came through?
Before Milton hit, we were in Florida, right before Milton hit, he had already started it. So it wasn't like, in all honesty, I would have thought that he'd be more inclined to not want to leave the house because of a hurricane, because he'd be scared of the sound and the wind and the thunder and the lightning, but he wouldn't come back in the house.
Right. Well, this actually fits a little bit of, I shouldn't say a little bit. The challenge with this is figuring out what has caused him to want to do this, obviously. And that's as much as helping him to get over the problem, or get over the issue of going through. The reason why I ask about hurricanes and such is, or obviously those were our biggest storms, but there are some dogs who are scared of thunder and lightning, but there's more of a comfort aspect if they're outside. It doesn't make sense. And this obviously is not true for every dog.
Okay.
So I don't know if maybe there's an aspect of that's going on, or, it could be if there was something inside the house that during that time that scared him. So now he thinks, oh, if a storm's coming, I'd rather be outside. There's just no way for us to know.
Here's the thing. He won't let me clip his nails. I am literally having to save money up to have somebody do his nails because he won't let me clip them at home. And we have tile flooring, wood flooring, so I'm thinking that that's part of it. But I've laid out carpet, and that still isn't making him feel comfortable.
Yeah. So I know I said it earlier with about checking with a veterinarian. I would absolutely talk to your veterinarian.
I did, and they told me that they couldn't give me any answers. So that's why I heard you talk to people. I was like, oh, let me ask him.
Yeah. Well, no.
That said, they had no idea what his issue was.
They didn't talk about any sort of behavior medication?
Nope.
Okay.
They told me their literal words to me were, if he was fine when you got him and he's not fine now, we don't know what to do. He can't help.
Okay. So without going into the whole bit, there is a what's called a fear imprint period for puppies that happens between like 4 and 6 weeks old. And sometimes if there are events that happen during that period that I'm just going to use the word traumatic, but it doesn't have to be. That's a wrong word to use. If there are things that are negative, let's say that got bullied by his litter mates during that time.
Yeah.
Or let's say there was a big storm that came through when he was 4 or 5 weeks old. With the fear imprint period, sometimes it can be about this age to when some of those things will show up. So this could be more of that development and kind of that early thing that happened there. Not to say that it is, but just thinking of what you're dealing with or, you know, what you're dealing with here. But also as we tie to the reluctance with the nail trims, that immediately starts me thinking of there are probably several layers of things that are in some ways that are connected and in other ways in their own accord or probably independent, if that makes sense.
So it could have been before with us. And we wouldn't know what had happened.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said it could have been before he was with us.
Oh, correct.
And known what had happened. Okay.
Right. But again, yeah, I think you said you got him at 8 weeks, so it wasn't a whole lot of it happened. But the important thing there is that it's the age if there was something. And we'll stick on this example like a really loud thunderstorm. Or storm type.
Okay. Or being picked on by his siblings. I mean.
Potentially, but that doesn't connect.
But I was told he was next to the runt of the litter. The runt of the litter was a female. He was the runt of the male of the litter.
Yeah. Well, there could be something sized to it, but as you see now, he's the biggest one in the house and still showing that. So,
yeah.
you know.
And then my second question was, I have a cat who I can put in my living room. Like, he'll come and hang with me on the couch in the living room. And I have the TV on, and he's fine. But the minute I turn the TV on in the bedroom, he freaks out.
The cat does.
Yes. Like I said, I had a two-part thing.
Oh, no, no. I just wanted to make sure that it was the dog didn't wasn't a piece of the equation.
No, he's fine.
Ugh.
I don't care about that. It's other animals he's scared of. But the cat is just scared of the TV in the bedroom. But he's fine with the TV in the living room. Like, I can't figure it out, and I don't want to lock him in the room. Like, I don't want to feel trapped. But I want to be able to turn the TV on in the bedroom.
But he will come into the bedroom without the TV on?
Yes. He's in there all the time without, like, I can even have my tablet on next to the bed with, like, Peacock or Netflix streaming, and he can stay in the room. But the minute the TV comes on, he freaks out and darts out of the room and won't come back on until it's off.
Even if it's on mute?
Yep. It's weird. And that's the, we have two cats. One cat eats right in front of the TV, and she has no problem with it. He eats on the table below it, like we feed him separately, and he eats on the table below it, but the minute the TV comes on, he runs out the room. Like, not even he'll hide under the bed. He just can't be in the room.
I don't know. I got nothing for you.
sometimes our expert is baffled, and you know we address question number one as much as we could. Question number two, it looks like we're going to have to pass on. But thank you so much for your call. I do want to get to at least one other listener here before our time's up and our time is.
Have a great day.
Okay, you thanks too. So much. All right, this is Ask the Trainer on Talking Animals on WNF. The trainer, of course, in this scenario is Glenn Hatchell. And we have at least one or two quick email things we're going to try to get to before the end of the show. So one is, again, a response to a previous caller. It says, for the Pyrenees dog, find an animal communicator. He or she will communicate with the dog, and the dog will let him know what is wrong. We use them several times as cats, and they're always correct. So that's... that's one piece of advice. Any quick thoughts you have on animal communicators, Glenn?
Someone who I know and have a tremendous amount of respect for had an experience with an animal communicator with an exotic animal, and the animal communicator was able to tell things to the staff that no one but staff knew. So it's the kind of thing I would say that it's amazing what animals can do, and it's amazing what some individuals can do. But, you know, I'm not smart enough alone. I don't have enough cerebral, whatever the thing. I can only look at the animal and see what they're doing, which I think is where it falls into behaviorism, of what they're doing and how to respond to it. So I don't have letters after my name like PhD and.
Well, you got some, but all right. Well, yeah, I think people sort of debate the animal communicator question, and I might have more to say on that on another show. And years ago, I had an animal communicator on, but that's like too long. We don't have the time. So let me say a couple quick things just by way of talking animals-related stuff for now or coming up or other shows coming up. And then we have one last email question that hopefully Glenn can address in our remaining time. So as I mentioned earlier, my guest next week will be Justin Barker, who has a compelling story. Really, I think multiple compelling stories, starting with at 13 years old, he founded Citizens Lobbying for Animals in Zoos. Was subsequently recognized in Teen People magazine as one of 20 teens who will change the world. Later wrote a young adult memoir called Bear Boy, and then launched San Francisco Zoo Watch, which chronicles the years-long string of animal deaths and at least one patron death and various other forms of mismanagement at the San Francisco Zoo. So he's already got kind of a long and storied history, and he's still a young man. So that'll be next week on Talking Animals. And coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, we shift back to music programming with Jim Bannon holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C, hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6, at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of live music kicks in. So we'll get into some other things as we have time, but let me read this email, Glenn, for what will probably be our last Ask the Trainer moment. It says, this spring, my 75-pound puppy tried to turn my neighbor's Barks a Lot 10-pound dog into a squeaky toy. Sadly, by the way, this subject heading is dog bite list. On the positive side, my neighbor picked up their dog and saved its life, but in the process, my neighbor got several hand bites by our scent hound. Our gal is now on the bite list. How can I get her off the list? Thanks.
Got to talk to the county. That's outside of my realm. I mean, that really comes to county regulations.
Yeah, I would assume once you're sort of notified and it's recorded that way, it'd be hard to undo that.
Well, I don't know what county it is, and I don't know how things changed in Hillsborough County, but in a situation like this in Hillsborough County, at least when I was working with some cases like this, is the court would order training and then I would do the training for the animals, at least to satisfy that portion of the court order. But that's all I did was from the training aspect. So, I mean, that's why I say this is all county.
And when you did do that in that scenario, was that dog able to be removed from the list?
No idea.
Okay.
It
you
was just
did what you did, and it was right. Insular from what happened right. afterwards.
Yeah, okay. The owner had, you know, a checklist of things that had to be completed for them to...
And that was one of them. Yeah.
And this was one of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, Glenn, you wanted me to remind you to give some websites at the end of the time
yes.
together. So we've talked about
some trainers and such. So there's two websites that I would recommend, and this is where you can find currently certified professional trainers and behavior people. One is the Certification Council for Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers, and it's CCPDT. At charliepapadogtango.org. And the other is the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, IAABC.org.
Okay, great. So those are places where people that called in and or that were just listening could find further information that would be helpful.
And they're also experienced in, we didn't get into this, but basically that process, it's called the humane hierarchy of working on changing a behavior as it progresses from rewards to medication and the on and on. And that's one of the values that I think that organization brings to the type of problems that were discussed today.
All right, cool. Thanks, Glenn. And so there was at least one call we didn't get a chance to get to. I'm very sorry, but we just kind of reached the end of our time, and we've got less than a minute to say goodbye and hand things off to the NPR News. And then, again, the conversation with Mario and Joe King Carter is coming up. So thank you for listening. Glenn, thanks again for another great edition of Ask the Trainer. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be in here in the studio with
you
live.
Yeah, it makes a difference. Nice to be face-to-face. So thanks for all your calls and emails, and we got to almost every single one, I think, and we'll do this again typically 3 or 4 months, and so hopefully if you didn't get your question asked today, you can find it in one of those websites that Glenn mentioned or tune back in. We'll be sure to announce when the next show is. So I think that's it for today's edition of Talking Animals. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Wiki-Watchee, and beyond. Stay tuned for the conversation coming up momentarily on WMNF Tampa. Thanks again.